I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Alana Chernila joins me now. The popular teacher and writer has a new book out, The Homemade Kitchen, Recipes for Cooking with Pleasure. It's a great guide to how to think about the kitchen, food, and cooking. Alana gets us to think locally as well as practically when it comes to what we make. The recipes in the book are easy to follow and look attractive and, I suspect, tasty too. There are a number of recipes that harness the bounty that we may have around this time of year, whether it's what to do with too many tomatoes or vegetables that need pickling. Have you ever thought of making lemon curd? There are instructions on how to do that too. What you get out of this book are new ideas on how to view cooking. It doesn't have to induce stress, and one can do all the things to live consciously too. Alana Chernila blogs at eatingfromthegroundup.com, and she lives in Massachusetts. The book is published by Clarkson Potter, which is an imprint of Crown. She joined me last week while in town for appearances to promote the book. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Alana Chernila. Ms. Chernila, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So the thing about cooking is that whether you're a guy or a gal or you're single or you're married with kids, it can stress a lot of people. So your advice to those of us who might be thinking that cooking is tough is what?
Well, you know, I think that it stresses everyone. I don't know anyone who doesn't drag their feet a little bit through the work of feeding themselves. But my advice to people is to really tune into the things that they love about the kitchen. And, you know, I start my book by encouraging people to start where they are. So what do they love to eat? What few experiences, if there are only few, do they love? Do they love the smell of baking apples in the oven? Or is there a memory of childhood that always makes them happy in the kitchen? Like, really to think about those moments and start from there. And then beyond that, always to know that, you know, they're going to mess up and it's going to be okay. We all mess up and, you know, nothing is lost. It's all right. And, you know, we do our best and then let go. And if there's some sort of food at the end that feeds us, it's a success. We don't need to be perfect in any way.
Yeah, there's a story in the book where your daughter, I guess, says she needs to make cookies, bake cookies.
Yeah.
But you say, you know, that she really wants to eat them. So, you know, that's a good way for her to get into the kitchen, right?
Absolutely. You know, I think if we're led by our cravings, it's just, it's the best motivator, right? And how do we learn how to make the things we want to eat? You know, we just have to practice.
Yeah. For you, I guess this is the guiding principle, if you will, the one rule that leads you in terms of the life you lead and the kitchen that you keep.
That this is the rule,
yeah.
That I do. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's so many ways that it's possible to eat in a way that reflects the way we want to live. And so when I can cook and eat in a way that makes me happy, that I can relax, that I can be easy on myself, that always follows that rule for myself in the kitchen. I want it to be joyful, and I want it to be play. You know, we always have a choice with all the work we do in our lives. You know, is this going to be work? Am I going to drag my feet through it? Or am I going to enjoy it? It's always up to us.
And the way that your kitchen is organized and the stuff that you prepare therein, that's influenced by where you live. So, I mean, everything that you can get in your area where you live there in Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
That's the stuff that you'll make, right?
Yeah, you know, I think I cook from my surroundings because that's what's most readily available to me. And, you know, there's a way, everyone talks about eating seasonally and locally, and, you know, I think I do what I can. But really, I love eating the products of my surroundings. I love eating the food that tastes like the season. And so it really all comes out of what I love to eat. And, yeah, Massachusetts has so much rich agriculture, and we have wonderful maple syrup, and all those foods really influence all my recipes and the way that I cook.
And so this time of year, I mean, a lot of people, you know, are preparing jams. We've got an excess of tomatoes from the garden, pickles. I mean, these are things that you do around this time of year. Is that right?
Yeah. You know, I think September is a really big month for me in terms of preservation, because it's always that moment when there's so much produce, and this year, especially in Massachusetts, we were having a wild apple year. We were just drowning in apples in the most wonderful way. So I was making a lot of apple chips and apple sauce. And so I'm always preserving the things that I have to. You know, if sometimes there's so much cabbage, and then I start working on my sauerkraut. And now, finally, those things are starting to wind down a little bit, and I'm able to shift over into, you know, cold weather cooking and thinking towards the holiday. And, you know, I love this time. It's one of my favorite times to be cooking.
Now, there's a vegetable that you talk about in the book that I found quite interesting. Broccoli rab. Is that how you pronounce it? Rab?
Oh, yeah. Broccoli rab. That's my favorite.
Yeah. And so for people to describe that for people that might not know what that is.
Yeah. It often comes by the name of rapini as well. And what it is, it's a green, it's in the broccoli family, but it's leafier and it wilts a bit more like a kale or a Swiss chard. But it has a really nice bitterness. And I find that bitter greens often have a floral nature as well, which I just love. They're sort of this dual. They smell like flowers to me, which makes sense because a lot of flowers like nasturtium or dandelion are also quite bitter. So broccoli rabe, it's often used in Italian cuisine, but I just love it always. I love it. It's wonderful on pasta, and there's nothing so good as broccoli rabe with pasta and mozzarella. It's a great green and a really nice one to discover.
Yeah, it's a robust one that you can use for various things as well, right? You can eat it on its own or as a side or...
Absolutely, and it's fantastic on pizza.
Really?
It's a nice use for it too, yeah.
So I was looking in my cupboard a couple weeks ago, and I noticed I had one of these really small pans.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that would be good for a recipe in the book. I'm going to butcher the name, shakshuka.
Shakshuka, yeah, that's a great one too. So that I have a whole chapter in the book which comes under the heading of feed yourself, which is something I always have to remember to do. I think so often, you know, people who do a lot of cooking for their families or for other people, when they're all alone, it can be difficult to remember not just to eat a bowl of cereal or crackers and cheese for lunch. So that chapter is filled with recipes for one that are really easy to put together, but are also a little bit fancy, and you know, you can throw it together in 10 minutes. And shakshuka is a great one. It's traditionally often served in Israel and, you know, parts of the world right around there. And what we do is I just create a really nice simple tomato sauce with tomatoes and peppers, and that cooks up really quickly. And then in that little pan, in the sauce, you just crack an egg. So the egg cooks in the sauce, and all it needs is a little wedge of bread, and it makes the most fantastic lunch. Sometimes I put a little scoop of ricotta or yogurt, and the creaminess goes into the tomato sauce, and it's lovely. You can make it in 10 minutes, but it's very special. And, you know, it satisfies the bread group, the egg group, and the tomato group, which I think are the most important of lunch. And it's so delicious.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I looked at the pan and said, well, what can I use this for? And then I read the book, and then, I'll use that one day.
It's perfect, yeah. Perfect for shakshuka.
I understand while you were in town, I read this on Twitter, that you were going to make congee on one of the television shows.
Yes, I did that this morning.
Yeah, and yeah. It was just thinking about this because I was reading up on Joan Didion, and she, in her book, The Year of Magical Thinking, said that...
I love that book.
Yeah, she said that congee was something that she ate during that period of time because you just eat it without thinking and you get your nourishment out of it.
Yeah, you know, it's so... I love that you brought that up. I had forgotten that about Joan Didion, and I love that book. And congee, in my book, is in a chapter called Be Helpful, which is a chapter filled with recipes that are really good for moments when you want to bring food to friends who are going through birth or death or some sort of difficult situation, when you just want to let them know that you are there to support them and you want to give them something that they can eat and feel comforted by. And congee is one of those ideal foods in those moments because it's true, it's so comforting. But it can be, you know, it's really just rice and water. And then beyond that, you can create any flavors in there that you want. But it is so nurturing and will feed you. But if you want, it can just be very bland. It's good for illness. It's good for sick kids who just need a little something to keep them going.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love putting chicken and greens and hot sauce and kimchi and all sorts of things on it. So it's also delicious and a really great vehicle for all those flavors. But it is, I think it's a useful tool to have on your side in taking care of yourself and other people, especially in those moments like Joan Didion writes. So,
yeah.
You know, those grieving moments when things are so hard.
And you've got neighbors like that, that bring over a casserole, a pasta or something, right, in those times of crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've learned from my friends really how to do it most. My friend Janet is the one who taught me about congee, and she is just, she shows up at any moment when she knows that things are hard, and she just brings a little extra dinner, and she says, oh, it's not so much for me, but I, you know, for me, I feel like I've never been so taken care of as I have in those moments. And it's just, food is such a wonderful way to show your support in your community in times when it can be hard to know what to do. You know, it can be hard to know how to let people know that you're there for them.
Yeah, that's what she says in the Your Magical Thinking, that it was there, so she ate it without really thinking about it. And you know, she was able to get through those difficult days in her life.
Yeah.
Where you live, you're able to get, say, cuts of meat and even whole pieces of whether it's beef or lamb or other animals of the sort. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah. I have some farmers around me who I'll regularly buy like a quarter of a cow or half a lamb. And I have a chest freezer in my basement. So it's a really economical way to buy really high quality meat.
Yeah.
And I like having all those cuts so I can have to be resourceful and try to figure out what to do with even things that I've never worked with before. So it's always an education for me.
Yeah, and there are certain cuts of meat that we never would have thought of eating, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that are coming back and that are on menus at restaurants and the sort. You've got a recipe in the book for the salad with the beef on top. I guess that's a Vietnamese thing?
Yeah, with the skirt steak.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, even when I was writing the book, the skirt steak was not a very well-known cut of meat. But even, you know, in this little bit of time, I've been seeing it more and more in restaurant menus. So it's a great cut of meat. It's often affordable, and it takes well, you know, it takes a marinade really well. So with those flavors and that recipe of fish sauce and lime and ginger, it really takes all that in. And that's a really quick recipe, but it's so delicious, especially in the summer. It's a wonderful one to make because you just have the lettuce and the cucumbers, and it all rolls together with the, you know, you quickly fry the skirt steak, and then you can just serve it with rice, and it's so good. It's really, really delicious.
Now, your part of the world, the potatoes, I mean, I guess anywhere now we can get all kinds of potatoes. We can get those little Yukon Gold ones or the russet. Those are available anywhere now, and I'm sure in your part of the world too, right?
Yeah, we grow a lot of potatoes in Massachusetts, and it's one of my favorite things to grow in my little backyard garden as well.
The recipe in the book that you have for roasted potato salad is one that I really like.
Oh, good. Yeah, I love that one too. I think so often we steam or boil our potatoes for a potato salad, but roasting it there's nothing so delicious as a roasted potato, right?
Yeah.
So you combine that with potato salad, and it's one of my favorite dishes in the book, actually. I love that one, and I make it a lot. I make it through the whole year because I can vary the other roasted vegetables.
Right.
And it, you know, it's wonderful sort of warm, or, you know, it doesn't have to just be a picnic dish. It's so good, and I use a more vinaigrette base than a mayonnaise base, so it's just has so many good flavors in there. I love that.
Yeah, and if you have leftovers from the night before from the roast, you can make that for the lunch the next day, right?
Absolutely. You could, and it would come together in just a few minutes, and yeah, it would be a big treat for lunch.
So I have friends who go to Trader Joe's in the States, just south of us here in Washington State, and who love their lemon curd. And there's a recipe in the book on how to make that yourself, and it's not difficult, is it?
Oh, no, it's so easy. And lemon curd is one of those things that's really gotten a reputation for being so fancy and difficult, but it is so simple. And if you have, you know, get a bag of good lemons and you can have a great jar of lemon curd. And when you have a big jar that you haven't spent $1 million on, then you have enough that you can use it in all sorts of ways. I love to stir it into yogurt, and, you know, I'll make full cake fillings with it. And it's just so delicious. And I also like to make it a bit less sweet than what we usually buy in the store, because I find that I can really taste that lemon, which I just love.
The other thing, there's a recipe in the book for those little fish-looking cheese crackers.
Yeah, goldfish.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people love those things. They buy them by the bag at the grocery store, but those are easy to make, too, at home, right?
Oh, yeah, those are so easy to make at home, and you can use really good cheddar, and, I love, when I make them at home, they're my children love it, and, you know, they always loved goldfish, especially when they were little, but it's a really nice grown-up snack, too. They go great with beer, and I find that most adults have a lot of memories of goldfish, or they have been wiping them from their kids' snack containers, and so they love having a homemade version. It's actually a really good party snack.
Now, who told you, Alana, that celebration is revolution?
That's from my father-in-law, who actually passed away earlier this year, and he was a poet in Denver, and, I learned so much about that from him. He just loved to celebrate, and he was very, he really taught me that joy is a way of making change, and what a message,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm so happy that I've had the time that I have with him. You know, I've known him, I've been married now for 13 years, so I had some really good time with him, and it was a big loss to our family, but we hold his messages very close to our heart now.
Yeah, reading the book, when I read that at the back of the book, And then thinking of the recipes and the writing that you did before that in the book, it all came together and it made sense to me. That while we think it's difficult to have people over, even just to cook food for ourselves sometimes, that if we look at it this other way, it becomes more meaningful. And when people come together, it's because of food, right?
No, it is. It's because of food, and food brings us together. I think, you know, so often it can be possible for it to pull us apart, you know, and we want so badly to be perfect, or we're worried about not doing it right. And I think when we focus on all the ways that it can really bring joy and meaning into our lives, it's always a unifier. And that, you know, I'm grateful to food, the role of food in my life for that, because it just has taught me so much just working my way through the kitchen. And, yeah, it really, it's wonderful to see people picking up on that more and more.
There's the great photographs in the book, and this is of you and your family. This is in and around your house there?
It is, yes. And yeah. Actually, the photographer, Jennifer May, she grew up in the Vancouver area. So I'm happy to, you know, she worked on both my first book and this book, and she's so talented. And I am very, very lucky to get to work with such an artist.
There's a great photograph in the book, and it's a fettuccine recipe, and it's such a delightful photo because there's hardly any of the food left in the bowl.
And we had a good time with those. We actually took all the pasta dishes. We took them at every single phase, and so we could have a lot of fun with that. And I love how the feeling of the dish comes across in that photo.
Exactly.
Even though you can't see any of the food.
Yeah, it's just so fun to see that, and because, you know, it probably tasted good, right?
Yeah, it tasted great, and that photo is taken actually right on my table. My kitchen table is blue. It's directly on my table, and so that's exactly what it looks like when you come to my house for dinner and you eat your pasta, and it's all gone.
The website, Eating from the Ground Up, I mean, that's become quite popular. Did the popularity of that, did that surprise you?
Yeah, you know, I started Eating from the Ground Up in 2008 when I was just really starting to get into food, and it really, you know, I was a writer before I was a cook, so it really started as an outlet for me to be able to really feel my way through writing about all of this. And I found that once I had a recipe to ground me as I was writing, it allowed me to be able to write in a way that I couldn't before. You know, I was able to sort of think about parenting and marriage and where I was in life and all my fears and my questions and my hopes. I was able to really think about those more clearly when I had a window of food to talk about. So I really started it as more of a journal, and there were maybe 3 people reading the first year and then 10 people the second year. And yeah, its growth has been surprising, but also so wonderful to get to connect with so many people. You know, I have people who are there with me and have been there with me for years, and who, when I ask questions, they weigh in so thoughtfully, and I've learned so much from the community there.
Yeah, and like this book, it's a resourceful one, and it's a way of looking at these things that would otherwise daunt us and cause us great consternation, but we can make it useful for ourselves, can't we?
Yeah. I think, you know, there's a place in the kitchen for everyone, no matter what their skill level or their comfortability. I think, you know, if we start right where we are and we think about what we're hungry for, we can all find our place there.
Have you had any good meals here in Vancouver while in town?
Oh, I have. I've had a few amazing meals. The first night I was here, I had dinner at Veege's, mm-hmm. which is so good, which I'd been hearing about for years. And then yesterday I had a great lunch at Long's Noodle House.
Oh, yeah.
Best soup dumplings I've ever had. It was fantastic. So I'm leaving Vancouver today, but I cannot wait to come back just to eat my way through the city. It's been fantastic.
Well, safe travels. It's been such a pleasure talking today, and this book is terrific. It's a helpful one.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
The website for more eating from thegroundup.com. The book is called The Homemade Kitchen. Recipes for Cooking with Pleasure. It's published by Clarkson Potter, which is an imprint of Crown. Alana Chernila, join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.